Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of our Breakfast with the Gators show. Come to you live on a Wednesday night, dropping Thursday morning. We are part of the Stadium and Gale Network and brought to you by our partner, Norris & Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida. Norris & Norris PA is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985, and you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Well, guys, it's finally here. It's Florida-Georgia week. We thought coming into the season, this November 1st slate was unworldly. Ohio State, Penn State, Ole Miss, South Carolina, a few other games are all top 20, top 25, in a few top 10 matchups that we're all penciling in our college football slate. No longer the case. Gators enter Jacksonville with the interim head coach under Billy Gonzalez. What are the vibes like right now, Dev?
Hey, we might be 3-4, but we're winners because we're going into this game without Billy Napier. The Lane Kiffin rumor seasons are in full effect. So gives you something to look forward to. You got rumors every day. You got Florida, Georgia to look forward to. I'm looking at my kitchen counters filled up with tailgating supplies that I picked up from Publix earlier. So I'm excited, man. Excited. Florida, Georgia week.
The boys are ready. Sam, out in Arizona, what are your plans Saturday afternoon?
Probably just kick my feet up, watch some good old Billy G football. Can't wait to see it. It's what we've been clamoring for. As weird as it is, you know, when you do fire a coach, it does create a little bit of an excitement. And I think with us doing it on the bye week leading into Georgia, it's definitely created more. I don't think we're going to win by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm still excited to, you know, see how the guys respond, see if there's new wrinkles to the play calling, which is what they're saying. But we've been told many things about play calling with this regime. I know there's the head guy's gone, but yeah, definitely just excited to see how the guys play. And I will say I wasn't, you know, being, you know, sarcastic or anything. I'm very excited for Billy G to get this opportunity. You know, you're talking about a guy who's been here for the good, the great, you know, and the bad, and he cares about the logo. So I'm really excited to, you know, see him get this opportunity. And I do think the team will continue to play hard. If they play hard for Billy Napier, I mean, goodness, they're going to look like All-Americans for Billy G the way I see it. But I don't think it really changes the result much, but definitely still excited to, you know, watch the outdoor tailgate. Won't be able to be there, but hope you guys have a great time and send out the Jacksonville series with a great tailgate.
They're playing for the Pats, man. We've heard it for 2 weeks.
Yeah, spot the ball is outdated at this point. We're playing for the patch. And, I didn't get to watch Billy G Monday in his press conference. I don't know if you guys got a segment of what stuck out. I'm not sure if you guys had the opportunity to watch. I did not. But we can talk about that in a little bit. If there's a moment or a quote from him. But he has mentioned the importance of the Florida-Georgia game, what it means to go into Jacksonville, play your biggest rival. We got a lot of kids on this team from the 904 in Duval County. Coming back to your home crowd, playing in front of a lot of family and friends, you know, you kind of grew up wanting to play in this game. Dev is now a local Jacks resident. We know what the team is going to be feeling as they come over the bridge, over the St. John's River, looking at all the tailgating, what we will be a part of, and knowing you're about to go play another top 10 opponent.
Yeah, it stuck out that Billy G kind of sounded like Mullen back in the day, talking about driving over the bridge and seeing the tailgating going on in Northeast Florida and how special that always was. And I know that Austin Barber talked this week about how much it means to him, you know, a fifth-year senior, a guy that's been here for some good and some bad, that gets one last opportunity to play in a special game against, our most bitter rival. In his hometown, it definitely means a lot. And, you know, me being a Jacksonville born but Atlanta raised guy, I remember growing up in Georgia, just south of Atlanta, and our neighborhood, we would have trick-or-treating was set around the Florida-Georgia game. Every Saturday of Florida-Georgia, we'd have a parade, everybody would watch Florida, Georgia, and then everybody would trick or treat that night. So we had, of course, the Gator flag flying proudly out in the front yard after we watched Chris Leak lead us to a couple wins in 05 and 06 that I definitely remember. And then the Gator stomp in 2007. And my first Florida Georgia game was 2008, probably my favorite memory growing up, going to a Florida Georgia game. So it was always something that was special, especially up there. You know, they'll bark at kids. They'll, you know, have kids come up and say the Gators suck to you that are, you know, 4 years old. So it runs deep. The hate runs deep. Being somebody, all my best friends, you know, growing up were all Georgia fans. So I was the Gator guy in elementary and middle school, in high school. So means a lot. Excited to see a bunch of friends and excited to get together. And it's about time for us to turn the tide again in this game. So hopefully the interim staff can start it, and then the new staff will reassert order as God intended. This rivalry.
Georgia's won four straight, seven of the last eight. They haven't won five straight over us since the late 70s, early 80s, well before any of us were born. And yeah, we've been on the flip side of this most of our lifetime as Gator fans growing up. My first game was in Jacksonville, 2005. You know, we upset a number four Georgia team. We know what happened in 06, and then obviously, you know, 08, 9, 10, and all the other great ones after that.
Yeah, 2008, I remember me and my dad waking up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. We're driving down 75, going southbound. Sky, you know, the sun finally comes up. It's a orange sun and a blue sky, and because God's a Gator. Driving into Jacksonville, having that same experience, you know, how it is now going. But the first time you experience it's so special. And then for that game, you have, you know, preseason number one Georgia team, Matt Stafford, A.J. Green, all those guys, and we just kill them. Joe Hayden's near pick six, Percy's wide open across the middle.
Brandon Spikes.
End of the game. Brandon Spikes setting the tone at the beginning of it on No'Shawn. It was just it's one of my all-time favorite Florida Gator football games. And it's such a special memory, especially something now that you appreciate as an adult, getting to experience it with your dad. So it's one of my number one favorite Gator games of all time. So that's what I think of when I think of Florida Georgia, is that 2008 game, and especially even the backdrop of it coming off of what they did in 2007. So
yeah, I was just about to say, because I was there in 2007 as well, and No'Shawn had 188 yards on us, and then we saw what happened the first two plays of 08, negative yards and negative yards. Sam, is there any specific moment game that sticks out to you? I know you've only been to a handful of the games in Jacksonville, but certain game that sticks out to you?
Yeah, well, like you mentioned, 08, you know, the Spikes, one of the most iconic plays, pictures, in really Gator sports alone, disregard just football or just talking about this rivalry. So definitely that game. And, I mean, you'd be reminiscent if you couldn't say the most recent win, you know, 2020, Kyle Trask just routing them up with the wheel routes. What a game. But no, I mean, I went to the game in 2018. That was my first game as a fan, as a student. Got really lucky, scored some good student lottery tickets, was right behind the end zone in the Stormtroopers. I think early, I don't remember if it was a flea flicker, but Felipe missed Van Jefferson very open, would have set the tone. And then we had the goal line stand for like 18 plays in a row. That's one of the main things I remember. And then I ran into Evander Holyfield grabbing a hot dog at the start of the third quarter. So that was pretty funny. But then I covered the game in 2019, thought we had a really good chance coming into it with that team after we had beaten Auburn. Kyle Trask was starting, you know, he was finally the quarterback, you know, after Felipe's injury. And then we just laid an absolute egg. So not a whole lot of great memories for me personally, but hoping that maybe this new staff, new look Gators can maybe create some more for us.
While we're going down memory lane, we got to talk about, you know, the Chaz Henry heroics in 2010.
Oh, yeah.
And the Todd Grantham giving him the choke sign while, as he goes up for the game-winning field goal in overtime and drills it. The punter.
With those ugly like they're almost like they look like the practice helmets from back in the day with the no stripe down the middle. I believe they had little some gator scales on that orange. It was we've worn ugly uniforms in this series.
Who was it that almost housed the interception in the overtime? Was it Will Hill?
It was Will Hill.
He took it down to the goal line, and we ended up having to reset and settle for a field goal. You know, Trey Burton had a long touchdown run in that game too. Yeah,
he did. And what 2014? We ran for nearly 400 yards on him. Kelvin Taylor and Matt Jones nearly
eclipsed. That was the Treon three pass attempts.
Yeah, no three completions. I think he was like 3 for 6, 3 for 7. He had one big one to Antonio Callaway down the sideline. That was like the only memorable pass the entire afternoon, but it was a big one.
Was that the game that got Rick fired? No, that was a couple years later when he started Fatone Bauta. When they randomly decided to, it's 2015, I think.
2015 or 2016.
I think 16 was Kirby's first year. I think it was 15 that they started Bauta, and I think it was. Was it Del Rio that just – I think it might have been Luke Del Rio that kind of diced him up a little bit in that game.
Yikes.
Dark times. I see why they're fighting.
What a pull, Dev.
That was the last time – or I guess 2016 was the last time the Gators have won in Jacksonville in front of a full crowd. So, obviously, with COVID being in 2020, half capacity or whatever it may have been, I was in Arizona at the time, so
I was there in 2020. We enjoyed it for the rest of the crowd that wasn't there.
I appreciate that. Well, and now it's time to get back on the winning side. What are we on the? Are we in the Jags home side? So we're on the west side of the stadium this year.
Yeah, we're home. East side, big game blues, and the east side of the stadium.
We're going all blue.
All blue. Billy told us in August.
Oh, yeah. So
there's one thing I did like about Billy Napier, just go ahead and get the uniform schedule out. I don't need a bunch of 14, 16-year-olds, like a few of the accounts that we don't like online that are big uniform junkies and like to create their own on NCAA 25.
He had the uniform schedule prepared a month before the season and didn't have the team prepared until a month after the season.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I don't know how you could – like, it would be cool if you, like, set out the uniforms and, like, we actually won. But why are you scheduling out the uniforms in advance, like, if the team you're putting on the field doesn't matter? And I'm of the opinion, like, if you got a big game coming up, like, you got to pull out the big game blues. And what if Billy Napier already predetermined in July that we're going to wear white pants? That kills momentum. And that is why, he's on LinkedIn and Indeed – probably hanging out in Cancun, but I digress.
Now, shout out, the Tioga Gains of Health and Fitness. Got a membership and was there the next day, Monday, apparently.
Sure he's super busy. He hadn't said anything to thank Gator Nation for their 16.
That is actually shocking to me.
That is. Even Dan Mullen put out a letter online.
Right, and just with how – obviously, we know he wasn't a great game day coach, but with how respected he did seem by obviously Scott Strickland, the rest of the administration, the players, for him to not put out a statement or even like make comment, really shocking to me, honestly, especially when you put in that Dan Mullen did it and that was a guy who basically quit on the job. I'm sure McElwain did and he made up rumors
death threats.
You know? So I don't know what's going on with Billy. Like, you don't have any reason to be butthurt. You did this to yourself. So, just say something to us, buddy.
Let's see. Jim McElwain did tweet a farewell message. October 29th, it's actually today, 8 years ago. Very nice. So, thank you, Jim McElwain. Imagine that. Well, guys, as we turn the tide, Billy G, the intern spark, I mean, realistically, Sammy, you've already said you don't see us winning. I believe we're 7.5-point underdogs, like plus 200 on the money line. Dev, are you staying away? Are you taking the Gators? We'll get into the score prediction later, but what's your initial thought of us pulling an upset?
I mean, the spread's still pretty in line with what you would expect and what the number has kind of been in all of these top 10 matchups that we've played so far this year. You just don't really know if you're going to get the, you know, LSU, Miami, Texas A&M version of the Gators, or if you'll get the Texas version of the Gators. And it's even more unknown variables with the interim staff, obviously. I'm very interested to see what notable changes there are in offensive philosophy. Like, I think the plays will generally stay the same, but I think that play sequencing is important. And that's something that, you know, just from a philosophy standpoint, that you can see a notable change from Napier to O'Hara. You know, a little bit's been said about O'Hara calling plays in the spring game, and you can kind of only take all that with a grain of salt. But when he called plays for Harrison Bailey in the spring game, I think he threw for 350 yards and was like 29 of 35 or something like that, which is obviously a lot more efficient and a lot more dangerous than the passing games look so far this year. So I think that that Billy kind of put together an interesting offensive staff that can kind of pull from a lot of different backgrounds. Like, Billy G kind of comes from that Dan Mullen spread, you know,
Urban Meyer
style offense. And then obviously Callaway comes from the Samford air raid. The new quarterback coach, Steve Spurrier Jr., obviously he has ties to the old fun and gun and more air raid tendencies also. And then we don't really know what O'Hara is, I don't think, in terms of what his background is. He's kind of the one making the biggest jump and kind of has the most unknowns. So I think that it's an interesting offensive staff. I'm interested to see how the strategy and how the philosophy on offense changes from what we saw for, you know, 45 games or whatever it was under Billy to now.
Under new Billy.
Yeah. Under the new Billy.
Billy 2.0. And I think it's beneficial that Gonzalez works with these guys. We've talked about it. We've alluded all year in the preseason of how talented we are at the outside, despite being a little inexperienced at that position with VB3, who's out. He's going to be out Saturday, as we learned Wednesday night due to the injury report. But, you know, Dallas was – he's around these guys a lot more than Billy Napier was, as he was a focus on the quarterbacks. He's going to want to get his guys to football. He knows how talented they are. I think we're going to see a little bit more vertical game. That's where DJ obviously excels. I forgot how many 40, 50-yard passes he threw a season ago. We've opened up that a little bit this year, and we've had some success. Texas A&M, those first early drives. Texas, we had some big plays down the field.
I was going to say, in these last couple games, you've kind of seen the flashes of 24 DJ come back. Just, I guess, as he's gotten healthier, got more reps in practice. So I'm interested to see, you know, I think he kind of re-aggravated that calf against Texas. But another bye week and DJ's young career, and it's a little early to make these kind of broad generalizations, but he's played well off of bye weeks. So I'm interested to see how he looks and how that vertical passing game looks.
Yeah, and Sam, then kind of allude to, if we're going to take more of those shots, get back into what DJ's comfortable with, Billy G knowing that unit inside and out and trying to get them more involved, what does that do for Jaden Balls? We understand how important he is in this offense, how that kind of opens up maybe a little bit more running lanes for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's an intriguing thought, because he's been a beast without having very many running lanes this year. So I love the idea of that. I know they did that the bye week to try to implement some things, but I just don't know, like, if they're carrying over still kind of the same plays playbook, how many really deep shots and opening routes do we have other than just the 4-yard, 5-yard hitch routes? So we'll see how much they can change in a week's time, but I love the idea of, you know, spreading out the passing game, some more spread offense, maybe that little air raid wrinkle in there, and then it can free up some running lanes for 13, even though, like I already said, he doesn't need them. That guy's a beast, so I have no problems. I have no doubts that he's going to go out there and have a great game.
Sorry, Sam, keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, and just like things you're looking for with the staff, I'd love to maybe just see like a little bit more tempo, urgency. Obviously we never saw that, and I just think it would be really funny if Billy G like was masterclass in the middle eight. That'd be sick.
Yeah, I think just the wrinkles themselves will allow Jaden Ball to get going and DJ to be a little bit more comfortable and kind of maybe hold off that defense just a little bit longer. and kind of get Glenn Schumann and Kirby Smart maybe second guessing. Obviously, they're some of the best in the country at what they do. But any wrinkle that maybe has not been shown on film this year will allow us to have a little bit more opportunity in this game. As I mentioned before the show, this has kind of been a college football season that I haven't watched a whole lot of ball outside the Florida Gators. Again, we're usually at the tailgate by 7:30 in the morning. We've got a TV. How much is that being watched? And really, Georgia kind of plays at the same time slots as Florida has, or they're playing, you know, in the night slate, the Gators hit the 3:30 or 4:15, and we're driving back to Jacksonville. And, you know, I'm usually listening to Steve Russell or trying to find the quickest bite to eat before we start podcasting. Dev, Sam, what are your thoughts on the Dogs? Obviously, they're not as dominant as what we've seen in years past. There were question marks about Gunnar Stockton. What are you seeing from their team that might give the Gators a little bit of trouble, or an area you think the Gators can maybe find a little weakness in the Dogs' personnel?
Yeah, Gunnar Stockton's been better than what I had hoped he'd be and what I expected him to be, you know, after watching him against Notre Dame last year late after Carson Beck went down. He's a gamer. I mean, I think that there's no other way to put it. When Georgia's needed a guy that can hang 40 points on an SEC defense in Knoxville against Ole Miss at home, he's been able to deliver. So I think that they've been a little Jekyll and Hyde, more so than what you'd expect from a Kirby Smart Georgia team. You know, they've had the two high-scoring, close one-score wins, overtime game against Tennessee. But then they also had games like the Auburn game where they struggled to move the ball. Kind of got fortunate with a couple of calls that got SEC refs suspended for the season. And then they lose at home to a good, not great, in my estimation, Alabama team. So I think that it's a gettable Georgia team. There's a reason why Florida's only a touchdown dog to them with an interim coach. So unfortunately, I don't know if Billy Napier had Florida in a position to take advantage of this gettable Georgia team. And they've been gettable for 2 years now, which is part of the reason why he's out of a job, because Georgia's is vulnerable and we haven't been able to take advantage of it. But going back to and I'll pass it off to Sam to talk about Georgia this year. But last year, obviously different defense to the point about Jaden Baugh and the run game. These running backs had a lot of success against Georgia's defense last year. You know, Jacoby Jackson and Jaden Baugh were the two leading rushers from the running backs. They combined for 29 carries for 138 yards. So really effective ground last year.
And that was with one-dimensional offense with Aiden Warner coming in playing most of the, you know.
Absolutely. And that was and that was kind of Jacoby Jackson's coming out party too.
Yep.
So this isn't a Georgia defense, and I think Georgia's defense is I don't have their statistics from last year to this year pulled up, but I know that they're middle of the pack in total defense this year. I know that their pass defense is worse than their run defense this season, but Florida returns, you know, most of its offensive line, haven't been as effective running the ball as we expected them to be so far this year. But you know, we have a talented offensive line, we have talented running backs. And if Georgia's susceptible to giving up yards on the ground, obviously that's something that can shorten the game and keep Florida in it, at least to make them a little uncomfortable going into the fourth quarter.
No, for sure. And I've probably been able to watch a little bit more Georgia than you guys have, just having the ability, you know, change a channel when the Gators, when Billy Napier calls a timeout before the two-minute warning, can circle back twice, actually. That gets me two TV timeouts. Shout out you to Billy. But I've definitely watched a little bit more of Georgia. I would say, I know I said it in our preseason episode that, like, this is the year you got to beat them. You know, we're coming in with all these expectations. They should be down. Some question marks about the quarterback. That has changed. Their Gunner is a very good player. Like Devin mentioned, he's just a gamer. I don't remember what his whole recruitment story was or anything, but I know he's been there for a while. He was sitting behind Carson Beck, played in the playoff game, wasn't necessarily anything to write home about, but he's a gamer, can make plays with his legs if he needs to. 10 touchdown passes this year, just one interception. So I would be looking to see if maybe the secondary can try to get their hands on a ball, pick him off. That would really set the tone. But And to the point, like, it's not the same old Georgia we've seen the last couple of years, like, because the defense may be a little bit down, but they can get in these track meets. You know, they got in one with Tennessee. They got in one with Ole Miss, and they won those games against track meet offenses. So you got to give them a little credit there, especially when you remember that Mike Bobo is the one calling plays for him, and he's putting up 40 points with Gunnar Stockton as his quarterback. So I think the Dogs are very – maybe a little bit more like balanced than years past, where they had, you know, relying on a very dominant defense and a serviceable offense. I think they're pretty balanced going into this game this year in Jacksonville.
Yeah, Gunnar Stockton's a former four-star from up in little old Raven County, Georgia, up in Northeast Georgia. I have some old friends that live up there still.
Well, and the Dogs is seven wins in the last eight tries against Gators. They're averaging 36.5 points a game. And it's been weird. The Gators scored 20 points in the last three matchups. So, obviously, it's going to take a lot better offensive performance to get over the hump and leave Everbank. Is it Everbank Stadium now? They've changed it like three times, I feel like, in the last decade.
Yeah, it's Everbank.
Everbank. So, yeah, if we want to get Everbank with a win, Gators are probably going to have to score 30 points. And we have not done that yet this year. So why not start Saturday in Jacksonville?
Hey, that's why we got rid of 29-point Billy Napier.
Exactly. All right, well, we can save it for the end of the show, or do you guys want to do the score predictions now before we jump into the rest of what we got on tap tonight?
Let's knock it out. Let's get out of the way, and then we can talk about the fun stuff.
All right, lead us off, Dev.
Yeah, I don't think that – I think that we're going to come out fast and catch them off guard with some of the stuff that we want to do. George is kind of notorious for starting slow this season. Obviously, Tennessee jumped on them pretty early, and Auburn jumped on them early, and then kind of both teams tried to hold on for dear life. So excited that we got a lot of those guys back in the secondary. I know that that Mia Jackson kind of disagreed on Castell being back healthy and what that means for the secondary. But getting Devin Moore off the injury report, getting Cormani off the injury report, I think that defense will hold up, particularly on the back end. If we get them in a spot where they got to throw the ball, it'll be nice having those guys in the secondary back. So I'll keep it reasonable. I'll go Gators 27, Georgia 17, and
reasonable.
It's reasonable. Gators by 10. Never going to pick us to lose. We send Georgia on their long drive back from Jacksonville, the losers that they are. So Gators by 10.
Sam?
We have many a sayings on this dear program, and one of them is, in all kinds of weather, except when it's profitable. So I think you might know where I'm going there. I'm definitely not going to bet on it by any stretch of the imagination, but I'll go Georgia 31, Gators 21.
All right. Yeah, I've got Dev. I just don't see us scoring 30 points in a meaningful football game. That's the problem. And you're going to have to score 30 to beat Georgia, in my opinion. Yeah, we like you mentioned, we got a healthy secondary. Reasonably healthy for what we can be at this point of the season. And, yeah, I like Alphonso Allen in the game a little bit more. What do you have, like 15 tackles against Mississippi State?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them by the line of scrimmage too.
Exactly. Get him in the box. Let's go make some tackles in the backfield. I thought he was superb. I know he had some breakdowns in the pass game, but that's all right with Kumani and a few of these other defensive backs that are making their return. I'll take the Gators. 27-24, and it's going to come down to a Trace Mack kick.
That's right, and we storm the field and throw them goalposts into the St. John's River like our forefathers did before us, right?
Correct. Yes, we can storm other fields, just not the swamp. All right. Well, I don't think we've had a show. I don't think you guys recorded in time for the Brian Kelly news. Dev, is that right? I listened to the show, but I was on a plane. And
No, yeah. That was all projected.
Projected. Well, it's here, and we've talked about some other jobs opening up and where the Gators would stack up. but it's official. Brian Kelly is out at LSU. It has been a whirlwind of, 48 hours, 72 hours since he's had, I guess it was Sunday night. So just over 48 hours since his departure. And they've seemingly, per the media's narrative, has jumped up to the number one job on the market. I certainly, the three of us and our group chat does not believe that. We believe the Florida Gators are the best job available at this time. Penn State falling in third, with a few other SEC schools falling behind them. But, Dev, what was your – I mean, we knew it was coming. We saw them get just thrashed on national television in Death Valley.
Yeah, when we were recording last week, I think the score to that game was 21-18, Texas A&M, and obviously by the end of the episode and in the hour after the episode ended, that game turned from 21-18 to 42-18, and it wasn't long after that that the writing was on the wall that Brian Kelly would be out in Baton Rouge, and it wouldn't take long for the national media that doesn't really pay that close of attention to you know reality to start forming whatever their opinions would be and whatever their narratives would be about the LSU job as it compares to the Florida job and kind of just putting out whatever nonsense echo chamber whatever way the wind blows is the way that they all kind of start to go after news like that comes out.
Yeah, and Sam, does it, you know, I heard some Fire Kelly chants from that crowd in Death Valley last Saturday night. Does that make them toxic down there in Baton Rouge?
Nope, they just care about their Tigers.
Interesting. All right, okay. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that.
Very funny narratives with the media, and you mentioned, Jackson, the whole, like, number one program thing. Obviously, I love the Gators. I'm a Gator. You know, that's my school. I could maybe made the argument that LSU is the number one job until the stuff that happened earlier today happened, which I'm sure we'll dive into.
Hit the tape, Dev. Hit the tape.
This is Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry on the open LSU head coaching job that apparently he has usurped his athletic director to get at the head of. So here's Jeff Landry today on the status of the LSU coaching search.
You know, to foot the bill. So, yeah, absolutely. Who's that? No. I can tell you right now, Scott Woodward is not selecting the next coach. Hell, I'll let Donald Trump select it before I let him do it. I don't know, but the Board of Supervisors is going to come up with a committee, and they're going to go find us a coach.
Okay.
This is hours after Trump addresses the military in Japan and is yelling "Roll Tide," and he's all allowed him to make a decision.
Yeah, that was crazy. Unbelievable, like unbelievable scenes. Like
just an incredible press conference.
One, like the accent, like it goes so hard, dude. Like the way he says, like "Nala." And like he's like, he ain't gonna fire this coach. We're gonna find someone else to fire the coach, and then we're gonna go eat a pot of a gumbo. And it's just incredible stuff. So that's exactly what I was mentioning. Maybe 48, 72 hours ago, could have made the argument LSU is a top job ahead of us just because of they control their state. You know, all of their youth little league teams, like they're all the Tigers. You know, like everyone's a Tiger there, and like they won a national championship with Ed Orgeron. To me, that says more about LSU. Obviously, Ed Orgeron recruited some great players there. I had Joe Brady calling the plays and everything. But then the governors or whoever that was, they started talking. And my goodness, did they bury Scott Woodward. Crazy nasty work, but I loved to see it.
The funniest thing was after the governor comes out and appoints the head of the Board of Supervisors as the guy that's leading this coaching search at LSU, they interviewed the Board of Supervisors and he looked like a deer in headlights. Like he had no idea. I think his exact response was, "That's news to me."
Yeah.
So not much. I'm not quite sure who's in charge over in the wonderful state of Louisiana. They may be the only school that anybody pays attention to in Louisiana, but They got a few too many hands in the pie. I don't think they have very much institutional alignment, as the media likes to put it.
Yeah, I agree. And that certainly that press conference and the interview at the Board of Supervisors screams stability down there in the boot. Can you imagine if Ron DeSantis came out and just scolded Scott Strickland like that while we're trying to hire a football coach?
He ain't making the hire. It's going to be Husseini on the Board of Trustees is heading it. What?
Just insane. And then the shot at Jimmy Sexton, too. Like, obviously, Jimmy Sexton is not going to want any of his clients.
I'm telling you guys, if you haven't listened to that full press conference, it is so worth the price of admission. It's something. And something that I did like, it's been a couple good news days for Florida, if you're into just listening to rumors, between LSU just self-imploding today, which who knows how much of an impact that ultimately has, you know, 6 weeks from now or however long it is from now that a hire is actually being made. But yesterday, Pete Thamel on ESPN says that he's hearing that ultimately the opportunities are going to be too good at Florida and LSU, that the expectation is that Lane won't be back at Ole Miss next year. So if that's true, and if, you know, what we saw happen at LSU today is true, which obviously that was pretty public, a public faceplant that Louisiana's that LSU's coaching search took today, that seems to scream good news on the Lane Kiffin front. And obviously, you know, we can all kind of pontificate and read tea leaves and guess and talk rumors all day. But in terms of public, national, front-facing news, it seems like everything that's happened over the last 48 hours has been good news for Florida.
Yeah, it's been great. And kind of a similar situation. I didn't realize LSU was in a similar spot as Florida in regards of having an interim president. What they got to make – I believe next Tuesday, the 4th, is when they'll announce their president – who certainly might not like their current athletic director, who is responsible for the Jimbo Fisher contract down in College Station and now responsible for a $53 million buyout of Brian Kelly. Things will get real weird here in the next 6 weeks before season end in Baton Rouge.
So that university president is getting appointed by LSU or the state of Louisiana's Board of Supervisors. The members of that board of supervisors are appointed by the governor, and the governor does not seem to be too keen on one Lane Kiffin's agent. And another thing that he kind of went off on was the $53 million debt that they have to pay off Brian Kelly to no longer coach them. So seems like just any way you slice it, a bad day for LSU's coaching search. And then a bad news for the president that's about to come into LSU, that they are going to be in lockstep with that governor that's kind of gone rogue and is usurping all of the LSU athletic department. So it's an interesting scenario going on over in Baton Rouge in the state of Louisiana.
This coaching carousel is going to be all time, and we haven't even gotten the first look at the college football playoff committee's rankings. Like,
yeah, we're not even in November yet.
Buckle up. Like, you forget, like, Arkansas, they were the first one here, and like, what are they doing? Like, yeah, they don't have a seat at the table anymore.
It's and you know, Auburn can still open up. Auburn's a really good job. Auburn's a great university, a great town. You know, you're obviously in the shadows of Alabama in that state, but still a lot of rich tradition, a great stadium, a lot of money that comes out of Auburn and support. So we haven't gotten to them if they potentially open up their job. It seems like Mike Norvell, though, at Florida State is going to stay. I can't believe I don't have the quotes from their athletic directors. Anybody got that handy or something we can pull up real quick? Because, goodness, that's kind of what he said. I guess this is in response to some emails by, I don't know, did anybody see who was sending these emails to him?
He was talking back and forth with boosters.
Gotcha.
And
obviously, they're not pleased, and that they leaked these responses.
Yeah, Yeah, so he was interacting Alford, Michael Alford, Florida State's athletic director. He was responding to boosters and fans sending him emails, which is already kind of a crazy premise to start with, that you're taking the time to respond to couch tweeters and emailers, people in their rural Central Florida basements, as a former coach would have said. But the one that stuck out was in response to a booster email. Michael Alford says, "The narrow margins in our losses and the quality of our wins speak volumes about the direction we're heading. Mind you, Florida State is 1-11 in their last 12 ACC games. That is good for 17th in the conference over that time span."
They're hanging on to that Bama win. They're hoping Ty Simpson wins the Heisman.
Hey, they've already won. They're
clutching on their pearls after getting that win.
Is that not how we thought internally, our athletic department thought about Billy Napier? Is that not – it's very similar, because we've been worried that, you know, Napier would be coaching this game and potentially coaching 2026 just because of how our administration had previously operated.
As awful as Billy Napier was, he was never 2-10.
It's a good point. He was never 12-0 in the regular season either. So. True.
He also lost to Vanderbilt before Vanderbilt was a top 10 team. Let me put some respect on. And I mean, I do agree, Jackson. I think that's how our administration operated going into this year, and then we lost to USF in week 2. So things change quick.
Yeah, our situation changed after the South Florida loss. I think that it kind of
100%.
Yeah,
that was the breaking point. Which I'm surprised that, you know, I kind of think FSU's operating with the financial constraints right now. Like, they're kind of feeling the effects of not being able to get out of that conference, and
they also dumped $400 and something million into the stadium just 2 years ago.
The money into the stadium, the money they're putting into rosters, and then the $60 million, $59 million, whatever it is, dollar buyout that they have. I think that they have a lot of problems that go beyond just like ignoring the fans and ignoring reality because they want to keep Mike Norvell. I think that it's much more deep institutional athletic department problems than just.
I mean. You know, would you rather him just come out and say, "We're broke, we can't afford to fire him," or go with the line that he came out with about the direction of the program due to the margin of losses and the big wins they have and the direction this program's headed?
You know, I really think they ultimately do fire him, especially
this year.
Yeah, because I think if you look at their schedule, they could get hot and win a couple games. If they lose to an interim coach in the Swamp, and I think they're going to, say that we're hot shakes or anything, but just because I think that we're more talented than they are, and it's in Gainesville, and we sell out the Swamp no matter what our record is, and it's going to be a night game in the Swamp. So I think that we're going to beat them that last game of the regular season, and that's going to have given them, you know, a month and a half to fundraise for his buyout. If they don't fire him, I guess it's because of the competition in the coaching market. But their situation is bad enough that I can't imagine them wanting to delay firing him another year and wasting another season when it's pretty clear that he hasn't had that locker room since the Georgia Orange Bowl. And what year was that?
He might not make it to Florida. He plays another interim coach in Virginia Tech. We haven't even mentioned that job being open, which I don't – Virginia Tech is a good job. It's a great area for recruiting. And, you know, they've been the household name of the ACC, not in about a decade and a half, but that's a good program. And they got to play an interim coach by Virginia Tech 2 weeks before us, a week after – a night game in Death Valley in Clemson. So who knows how that team will respond. Potentially 11 straight ACC losses going into that game. That's just unbelievable.
I hope he sticks around a little bit longer.
Yeah, I won't complain.
Yeah.
And and when you just add everything.
They can seriously upgrade, without a doubt.
They can, but like Devin said, like, do they want to get into this game right now? And if they did, I think I think they might go after my guy Kenny down the road, Kenny in Scottsdale. He was Norvell's OC at one point, so he does have a little connection there. And I think not to make this about Kenny Dillingham, but the people around Arizona State are kind of starting to change their tune a little bit this week when he made the, oh, we're focused about right now, you know, when asked about the coaching rumors. But I don't think FSU wants to, in just looking at the coaching pool outside of the big names, because they would probably have to land, you know, underneath given their financial situation. So I could see them maybe if Norvell can scrape together a couple of wins, keeping him around. And then kind of trying to – what we should have done last year, be in an area where you are the job that is controlling the coaching market.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation because I think, you know, we're obviously biased, but I think that it's pretty clear that the Florida and LSU jobs are a step above the rest, and then Penn State's right below that. And then, like, let's say Arkansas is already open. Auburn's going to likely open. If FSU comes open, they probably slot in around Auburn. But I think that Auburn has the benefit of being in the SEC. I think Arkansas being in the SEC is a pretty big benefit for them. Like, obviously, the Florida State brand historically in college football is better than the Arkansas brand. But I think that nowadays the conference does matter. So I think that FSU's in a precarious spot where – if they come open, they're probably the, at best, fifth job available behind Florida, LSU, Penn State, and Auburn, assuming Auburn comes open. So I think that they're in a – and when you're the fifth in the pecking order, the chances of you landing a championship-level coach, obviously somebody that they hire, it's going to be difficult to be worse than what Norvell's been the last 2 years.
Right.
But – when the haves are getting more and the have-nots are getting less, and the SEC and the Big Ten are haves and the ACC and the Big 12 are haves-nots at this point, I think that they are at risk of really falling behind. And that's something that I take a lot of glee in as a Florida fan, but it's more of a warning to Florida State because I think that they are at major risk. They settle on a goalish who looks like a mid-tier candidate for most of these top jobs, or a low-tier candidate for most of these top jobs that the bigger schools are going to pass on. Well, if the FSU job is too big for him and he falls flat on his face, you know, what does that look like for Florida State? And I don't think that it looks pretty.
Yeah, we've been on the Brian Hartline train as a potential opportunity. If we strike out with Lane Kiffin, I don't know if Florida State's a horrible landing spot for him. He gets a lot of recruits out of the state of Florida. It might be a good change of pace going to the ACC where it's not uber competitive, kind of go get his feet wet.
I think some of the national buzz at Penn State, you know, the initial name that we all heard was Matt Rhule, and Nebraska's kind of fallen flat on their face since that buzz kind of started. So I think his name's cooled off on the Penn State search, and I think Brian Hartline's has heated up some.
Which Joe Brady as well for that Penn State job.
I don't know. I think Joe Brady's going to – if he comes to college, it'll be at LSU, and I don't anticipate him going to college. I think he's going to stay in the NFL.
I think he gets an NFL head coaching job.
Yeah, yeah. I think that an NFL guy that you could see come back would be a Cliff Kingsbury, because they've kind of been disappointing in Washington a little bit this year. I think you could see him get one of these jobs and be successful after, you know, a good few years in the NFL for him.
I don't know. I was still working in sports media when Cliff was the head coach here. I don't know about that one, Chief.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's the offensive scheme, and you know, he kind of leads Jaden Daniels to a rookie of the year and an NFC championship. And you know, obviously, we all are familiar with Dan Quinn from his time at Florida, but I think he's a good head coach. He's coached in a Super Bowl, so he's learning from a guy that's good in the NFL, that's had success in the NFL. Cliff is. So it's
Dan Quinn coached in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he coached for the Falcons. Oh yeah, you didn't hear about that?
No,
he led in a Super Bowl actually.
How much?
28 to.
Damn, that sucks, Dev. So we're going to move on. I think that's our last little bit of the coaching carousel and our rumors and what we've heard online and what we've been reading. Let's jump into – I think we're just five days now once we drop this podcast from basketball season starting. I mean, this is – a winning program is back. We finally get to watch a competent coach and a competent team defending our title. I mean, it's going to be hard. We saw what we did when we went back-to-back in 06, 07. You're going to get everyone's best shot. There's not a bit better stage to start than Las Vegas against, I believe, the number 11 Arizona Wildcats. Sam, what do you know about Zona being out there just, what, 2 hours north of Tucson?
Yeah, truth be told, not a whole lot about this current Arizona team, just because I feel like obviously we know how much the transfer portal affects football with these big transfers, but like what it's done in basketball is crazy. And I don't think that in like a bad way, but you can legitimately like flip your whole team. We've seen Todd Golden not necessarily flip his whole team, but use it to his advantage. Tommy Lloyd's a great coach. They always have good talent down in Tucson. He comes from, you know, Gonzaga under Mark Few. They're always competitive. I think that's going to be a really good game. But yeah, I'm excited to see the boys on the court again. New look team, couple new additions. But yeah, should be a great game. I definitely think, like I said, don't know a whole lot about Arizona roster wise going into the year. But I expect it to be a very high competitive game and a really good test to start the season.
It's not Sean Miller there anymore at Arizona?
No.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly a different start than what our team in 2006-2007, they opened up with Samford, North Florida, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Chattanooga, Prairie View, Western Kentucky, and then finally went to Las Vegas to play Kansas before an 82-80 overtime loss. So Gators taking the challenge early. We got a few big non-conference games. And then I think we got the home opener next the following Thursday against North Florida. I will be there. I believe that's the banner reveal. And then Florida State the week after. And obviously we play Duke and Cameron Indoor Stadium. And then UConn and Madison Square Garden. So we might take some lulls early, which is fine. We're going to get everyone's best effort. I think it's a great preparation before the conference slate starts. I'm not all too concerned if we drop, you know, two of those three. I'd hope, you know, to go 2-1 out of those three big ones, with two of them being neutral site games. And then obviously the big one at Cameron Indoor. But where do you guys want to see how we start off in that non-conference slate? We've got two new starting guards Xavier Lee and Boogie Flan coming over in the transfer portal from Princeton and Arkansas. And now Tommy Houck getting off the bench and starting in that three position. So a new five. How do you think this team handles adversity? And where do you kind of want to see us before we can start league play in January?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be nearly impossible to replace Walter Clayton, Will Richard, and Elijah Martin. They're just going to be school legends, guys that, you know, for 20 years, we're going to be talking about the new tandems that are trying to live up to the legacy that they created for themselves last year. Luckily, I mean, we have a killer for a head coach that brought in, you know, a McDonald's All-American type talent in Boogie Flan that played well when he was healthy for Arkansas, really came on towards the end of last year and for their tournament run last year. And then one of the top transfer guards in the country from the Ivy League and Xavier Lee. So I think it's going to take them a little bit of time. I think that it's obviously a good test. We've heard good things early. Boogie obviously missed the secret scrimmage against Illinois. So I'm excited to see how those guys gel. I think our front court's going to be awesome. They were already really good at passing and dishing out from, you know, when you get the ball down low, you can trust them to have good vision to kick it back out, or they can post up and score inside. So being able to have those guys to lean on, I think is great. And it's going to, you know, obviously the floor is going to be high. I think I read that, who are those analytics sites? Not KenPom, but is it Mayaka or something like that?
Yeah.
Florida with the number one statistical projected starting five in the country. And it didn't really matter who the big guys were just because we're so deep. It could be Handlocked and it could be Chinyelu. It could be Condon down there. It didn't matter. Mix and match with Hauk at the three and Boogie and Lee at guard. I think that the analytics love the roster, construction. And then the challenges that they have early in the season will help them be prepared for March. So it's exciting, man. It's a well-run, well-oiled machine of a program right now. Going into year four, I think that when that hire was made, you couldn't have possibly dreamed it being as good as quickly as Todd's turned it into a national powerhouse. I checked last week and tickets in Cameron Indoor Stadium. I can't imagine they've been much more expensive than they are when the Gators roll into town. The get in the door price was $1,141. So I will be missing that game. I know that that it's a little bit cheaper to get into Madison Square Garden and to get into to the T-Mobile Arena out in Vegas for the Arizona game. So it's part of being a national championship program. Tickets for SEC games are a lot more expensive going into this season. It's going to be an incredible home schedule, incredible non-conference schedule. Going to be a fun ride. I know that that we're all excited to see our next head coach get introduced at halftime of the Tennessee game in January. Todd's boys blowing out Rick Barnes' Tennessee team, and then halftime have the guy sitting over Jackson's right shoulder introduced and speaking to the crowd. So I think it'll be a fun couple of months down in Gainesville with a program worthy of you know all the accolades that they're getting going into this year.
No, absolutely. Like to your point, Devin, like it's going to be impossible for them to the new guys coming in and even the guys returning. It's going to be impossible to replace everything that happened last season, just the players, the moments, the run we went on. But I am really excited to see the backcourt, new backcourt in Boogie and Xavian. Like you said, Devin, like Boogie Flame was supposed to be a Coach Cal one and done. And I think his injury probably impacted that a little bit. But an all-American type talent, you know, coming out of high school, and from everything we've heard, just going to be an absolute stud defensively. And then I think that's exactly where a great combo with Xavian Lee comes in. Hand up, didn't watch a whole lot of Princeton basketball last year. Guilty as charged. But like the highlight tapes of this kid are incredible. Like he's a tall ball distributing guard, can create his own shot, can take it to the rack. Like I'm excited to see him too. Could not work. You never know. But that backcourt is intriguing, and I'm intrigued to see Tommy at the three. Do I know if is that going to really pan out? But like you said, having the front court with other depth with Ruben and Logden and Condon, you can get really flexible with Tommy. You can put him up to the four. He's like a Swiss Army knife, a jack of all trades. So, and I think he's going to take an even further leap. And really excited to see the guys returning the front court. Like how much of a leadership, and you know how much do they really use it to fuel them to try to continue to stamp their legacy at Florida. So I'm jacked to see this basketball team. And of course, like you mentioned, Todd Golden, he's so fun to watch coach basketball, makes adjustments. He's fired up on the court when the guys are making plays. It's just a joy to watch, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the boys back on the hard court.
I am kind of worried about this team having to play in last year's team shadow. Like I think that, you know, one of the stories that you hear about from the 07 team is they kind of, you know, had that lull during SEC play. They lost a couple games in a row. I think Tennessee got them. I think they lost to Vanderbilt, had a little mini losing streak during SEC play that season. And I worry a little bit about how this team creates their own legacy. And I think that's something that I'm watching for, because I think every time they struggle or every time they go out there, it's going to be, well, Walt would have done this. Well, Richard would have done this. Elijah would have done that. So seeing this team kind of grow into its own team and with different leaderships and different guys that you're relying on for the big shot and the big moment, that's what's exciting too about this year. You know, they can be as talented as you want them to be. They're the defending national champions, but watching this talented group kind of mold into its own unique special unit is exciting. It's exciting going into this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. This is the best time of the year. I got season tickets. I know Hunter and Will also, who are not on the show tonight, have season tickets for Hoops. So we'll be in the O-Dome a lot, supporting Todd Golden and, our boys, starting, I guess, next Thursday in Gainesville, but Monday night in Las Vegas. And Dev, I will actually be in Cameron Indoor December 2nd. So stoked to see the boys hopefully rise to the occasion and beat the best ACC team in their respective conference. So a lot of fun times ahead. We've got Oxford coming up in a few weeks, but, you know, focus right now is on the Dogs. And you know, Will and I are actually going to Danny Werfel's gala tomorrow night. I guess tonight, Thursday night, at TPC Sawgrass. So if any of our listeners are there, come say hello to us. Big Florida Georgia party, big fundraising event, golf tournament on Friday.
It's got to be a gala to get Will to show up.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the first invite, I think, in my life that he's actually showing up. And it's because he gets to go rub elbows with former Florida Gators and former Georgia Bulldogs that will be in attendance. So, but hopefully I moved up his friends list ranking just a smidge for getting him hooked up on this.
He might be insufferable there.
Oh, he's already texted me if he can wear his UF Hall of Fame pin on his sports coat. So
he's going to have those penny loafers signed up. He's going to have the quarter zip wrapped around his waist. God, this guy.
I'll make sure to send plenty of pics into the chat for a little Will roasting tomorrow night.
That's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. All the Florida Georgia Week festivities are always awesome.
Just a blast. Love that it's in here in Jacksonville. Like this is I think my third Florida Georgia game now living in Jacksonville, and it's God. You know, it was nice driving over from Gainesville. It's great growing up in Gainesville, and just having a quick 90-minute drive, but there's nothing better. I mean, you know, I live 400 feet from the St. John's River right here in Riverside. So, it's certainly a lot of fun waking up Saturday morning. Know I can just walk to the stadium, walk to the tailgate. I'll be joining Dev, Hunter, and our producer Jacob Lovelace. Where exactly are we at, Dev? Because I know
over if
listeners want to come visit, swing on by.
Yeah, we'll be over in Tailgaters. So shoot the Breakfast with the Gators account a DM, and we'll get you the exact location once we have it set up and ready to roll on game day.
I know I usually have a Lot J pass, and I've got a Georgia Tech flag that flies underneath the Gator flag. It's an easy tailgating spot to find because it pisses off Georgia fans in both regards, right? It's just go find the yellow flag and the lot of orange and blue and red and black. And but I'll be joining you fellas Saturday, so I can't wait. Sam, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Maybe be a little wary of flying the Georgia Tech flag with some of the rumblings going around, particularly.
That's why I'm not hosting this year, Sam. I gotta do it.
Light bulb went off in my head, so just maybe steer clear of that. But no, I hope you guys have a great time. Stay safe over there. You know, those Georgia fans can be a piece of work. So don't get into bad business. Stay safe. Have a time. And THWG is all right.
The hell of Georgia.
The last time in Jacksonville for 2 years. So you know we're gonna send it out the right way. Do our part. At the very least.
Yeah. And we'll get you guys some, yeah, we need one to turn the tide before we head to Atlanta next year, but we'll have some, a little bit more interesting feedback and takes on the Gator basketball season after our game against Georgia, obviously the tip Monday. We won't have, an additional show for Hoops. So once we get the full crew back on, we'll have some hot takes kind of like we did for Hoops. Hopefully, we hit at a much higher rate with a competent basketball team led by Todd Golden. But make sure you guys like, subscribe, whether you're listening via YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and follow us at BreakfastWTG on Twitter. Interact with us throughout the week. We post some clips, some thoughts on the games. But we'd appreciate you guys listening again, and to hell with Georgia.
To hell with Georgia.